Facebook has had a bit of a rough year, I think we can say. But,
yeah.
But it's still got a great community of engaged users. So it's still a really smart way to hub content and conversation. When you're trying to understand who someone is, you typically try to find their LinkedIn page as a start. So just having an up-to-date, an easily findable page that gives some explanation of who you are is a great jumping-off point. Twitter is, I think, one place, maybe perhaps the place most vulnerable to trolls and just some of the harassment that we're struggling a bit with, as you know, society is catching up to technology.
When I think about Twitter, like if I had to put like a most basic way to describe different social media, I would describe Twitter as a room full of people screaming at each other.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Powering Up, a cross-generational conversation about female power, what it looks like, why it's important, and the fascinating ways women and girls are claiming it these days, individually and collectively. I'm Ann Doyle, author of Powering Up, How America's Women Achievers Become Leaders.
And I'm Monica Doyle. I'm proud to bring the millennial perspective to this podcast. Today, the topic is social media, how to use it to build your personal and professional brand, as well as tips on mistakes to avoid, best ways to build your buzz. And whether your favorite platform is Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, or Instagram, we can all learn from the expertise and advice of today's guest, Ashley Whitlock, a vice president with Edelman and Global Communications and Marketing Firm.
Welcome, Ashley.
Thank you, Anne. Thank you, Monica. I'm glad to be with you today.
Well, I know you are based in Washington, D.C., and have been specializing in branding and helping companies and individuals to tell their stories and build positive buzz for about 12 years. And you and I met recently at the Global Conference of the International Women's Forum, where you gave a fascinating presentation to the President's Council. And on the effective use of social media, I took tons of notes, and you may remember that I immediately cornered you and invited you to do an episode with us.
Yeah.
So tell us more about how you are using social media at a company as respected as Edelman.
Sure. So, you know, when we're working with our clients and thinking about all the ways that we want to share their story and to help them articulate what they're working on and why they're doing it and why it's important to their customers and to their consumers and to their stakeholders, one of the first things we're thinking about is who are the right audiences and how are the right ways to get to them.
Mm-hmm.
And what's so great about social media is it gives us a variety of different channels and ways that we can engage with their audiences right where they're looking for content, looking for information, seeking new news, et cetera. So we can kind of, you know, intercept our consumers right in the midst of their lives with content and information that's interesting and relevant and helps them make the decisions, the millions of decisions they're all making on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm. And before we start getting into all the different possible ways we can take this conversation, I just want to know a little bit more about you personally in terms of, you know, what brought you to this?
Yeah, so, you know, that's a good question. You know, I grew up in Georgia. I went to school at Mercer University in Macon, and I applied to and enrolled in the business school, and having taken, you know, a variety of classes in my freshman sophomore year, I feel like I did what so many of my peers have said, you know, they did something similar to, in that I was like, well, gee, I like working with people, so I'd be great in public relations and marketing. You know, refined my strategy a little bit, took a couple of marketing courses, actually studied abroad in order to get some PR strategy courses. They weren't offered at my school, and was just lucky enough or persistent enough to find an opportunity at our Edelman offices in Atlanta.
Okay.
And when I got in, you know, of course, I think it's something we all find when we start our first job. The job wasn't exactly like I had thought in my head it might be, but it turned out to be even more interesting. So I think what I continue to find so fascinating is, you know, we have this real opportunity to come alongside our clients and really help them solve business issues through communications. And by doing that, you know, every day looks a little different. Communications is changing rapidly. You know, you've seen firsthand all the changes in journalism over the past decade. Social media has certainly upended things in good ways, but has, you know, created a more dynamic and fast-moving environment. And, you know, as globalism has shifted how our clients operate, it's just necessitated we all continue to evolve pretty rapidly. So it keeps the job very interesting.
So I would actually like to know, I'm very interested in the idea of working particularly with helping people through social media platforms. I'm curious, with all the different generations having a vastly different experience on tech and media lately, what are your experiences with helping people through various ways of using social media to their advantage? And what's the most common struggle among everybody?
Yeah, that's a great question. A couple of great questions. So I think one of the things that we continue to make sure that we're staying current on is who is using what channel, right? Are there interesting demographic shifts? Are, you know, are we starting to see that the audience on Facebook is aging a little bit, that younger generations maybe are dropping off or not using it in the same way? How are, by contrast, as younger generations maybe using Instagram or Twitter or Snapchat or, you know, another platform differently? And by understanding who's on each platform and what they're looking for, that helps us tailor the information we're putting on each. So while we may be sharing bits of the same story across all of our platforms, we might be sharing them a little differently, right? We might have a video on Facebook that looks a little differently than, you know, a shorter video or animated short that posts on Instagram or another channel. So it's important to understand who's consuming the information, what is it that they're looking for, and metering how and where we put it accordingly. So that's kind of a general response. I'm happy to go a little more specific if you'd like.
Yeah, let's go more specific on each of those. I mean, the major platforms. Yeah, give us a sense of who's on what.
So let's do that then through the lens of how they're typically being used and go from there. So I think why don't we start with Facebook? So, you know, Facebook has had a bit of a rough year, I think we can say. But it's still got a great community of engaged users. So it's still a really smart way to hub content and conversation. So you can have photos, you can have video, you can have dialogue. It's a great way to catch people's attention and maybe direct them to a website, direct them to your podcast. And on Facebook, the community remains very focused on engagement and dialogue, right? So there's this expectation that you're going to that conversation back and forth. Facebook Live continues to be a great way to bring people to an event or to an experience that maybe they might not be able to get to otherwise. So it's still got a pretty robust following. I think that, you know, we're seeing that younger consumers, Gen Z, aren't really engaging in Facebook in quite the same way that millennials did, and in some cases continue to. And
they're moving away.
Yeah, they are. And by contrast, older consumers have started to adopt Facebook. So we're seeing, you know, consumers in their 50s, 60s, and 70s using it to stay in touch with friends and family and to share news coverage and just generally keep up with people's lives. So, you know, one of the things we're cognizant of is that the Facebook audience is aging a little bit, and that to catch those younger consumers, we need to be thinking differently about how we're engaging maybe on Instagram through Instagram stories, Instagram Live, as well as how we're just ensuring that we're cross-promoting and sharing information on platforms even like Twitter.
So Instagram then.
Yeah. So Instagram. Instagram's fun. I think, you know, Instagram is one that I personally use quite a bit. I think what's interesting about Instagram is the content tends to be a little less formal. It's a chance for kind of more candid and behind the scenes and personality-driven content, if you will. So, you know, it started out as just being pictures, just a single picture, and it's, you know, been great to see it expand to slideshows and stories and live content. And we've seen a lot of younger consumers that were maybe originally engaging in Facebook, on Facebook with some of that sort of content now moving over to Instagram, where maybe they're curating their who they're following and who's following them a little differently, and where they're able to engage with some of the ephemeral content, so that the stories that, you know, don't last forever in your feed in the same way, but where they're also able to showcase highlights, personal and professional, via the typical post.
So I've personally actually been witnessing this switchover from Facebook to Instagram lately. And it's been really interesting to me because I did experience stuff like the death of MySpace, things like that.
Remember MySpace?
Yeah. Well, and so now I'm kind of curious, what does sort of the, I mean, Facebook's not dead yet, but what does the death of a platform such as what happened with MySpace, what does something like that do to affect how people have, when people start to add their brand and their advertising of themselves and their companies to something like Facebook, how does the death of one social media and the movement to a different one, how does that affect that?
Yeah, yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think what's, you know, in everybody's favor with both their personal brand and how we're all evolving on social media is that your personal brand tends to be living and breathing, and the social channel is just how you showcase and support that brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're all connected, and they don't die off immediately, right?
They don't,
It's not going to go dark on us tomorrow. So I think that it's important to continue to track with what platform works best for you in that moment, and be open to evolving or changing your strategy if you're seeing that maybe you're not getting as much engagement or benefit from the content you're putting on Facebook, but instead are getting more engagement on maybe a LinkedIn or an Instagram, and as a result starting to shift some of your energies into new platforms.
So effectively with platforms like this now being sort of an evolving organism, basically, nowadays, you would be remiss to have just one social platform advertising your product, your company. So basically, in order to be a part of this system of social media, you have to be constantly evolving. Does that at all dampen the ability of people to advertise their products, since they have to constantly be changing with the social media, because it changes almost seemingly from like month to month?
it is pretty dynamic. I think that what's great about social media is it's all somewhat connected, right? It's all online. It's easy to move from one platform to the next, so it's not like you're confining your content and your brand to this particular space that is, you know, hard to move in and out of, right? It's pretty seamless. So I think that you're right. There's value in having a couple of different platforms, so long as you can support them well, right? Start with one, but build from there. And being able to tailor how you're sharing your content, what you're sharing based on those platforms. So not everything that you would share on Facebook is going to work the same on another platform. I don't think it's going to damage or dampen your ability to share products and to share updates as these platforms evolve, because they're evolving slowly. So you have time to be responsive and you have time to change your strategy. And I think what we're seeing as we're working with clients, and even what I'm seeing in my personal channels, is that, you know, how I'm engaging with these channels is evolving just as the channels are evolving too. So by being present and part of the community, you're sensing what is and isn't working in quite the same way, and you are taking the small steps in, you know, on almost a daily basis to react and respond, so you're not getting caught in a position where you feel like, you know, the train has left the station and you're still standing, you know, on waiting to get aboard.
Well, you talked a little bit about Facebook in terms of who's on it and how to use that, and then you touched on Instagram in terms of the same thing, but two other major platforms, Twitter and LinkedIn. Give us some perspective on how they're different, who's using them, and how to use those best.
Yeah, so let's start with Twitter first. So, you know, Twitter's still very popular for breaking news. From a company perspective, it's very popular for customer service inquiries and conversations. It's very much a place where people are quickly sharing information, so you don't always have the same level of deep engagement, right? Instead, you're sending people often to another place. So maybe you're sharing a link and a quick perspective and then sending them somewhere for a deeper dive into the topic. So I think what's great about Twitter is it's a really fast-moving, you know, great opportunity for quickly sharing thoughts, perspectives, some of your own, but also curating opinions and work from people around you that you really respect, admire, you think are interesting or contributing to your work and how you're thinking. It's very much a sharing space. You have to be careful. It's very noisy.
When you say noisy, what do you mean by that?
There's a lot going on any given minute. So you can get lost in Twitter. You certainly want to be thinking about how you're using hashtags and tagging people in order to up the probability that people and the right people are seeing your content. And certainly, you know, Twitter is, I think, one place, maybe perhaps the place most vulnerable to trolls and just some of the harassment that we're struggling a bit with, and, you know, society is catching up to technology. And so I think it's one place where it's worth remembering that you're often not going to solve a fight online. And so a bit of a thick skin, right, goes a long way on Twitter. I think it's a place where our ability to debate is really limited, and so that's just something to be cognizant of.
I mean, when I think about Twitter, like, if I had to put, like, a most basic way to describe different social media, I would describe Twitter as a room full of people screaming at each other. Like, just and not talking to each other, screaming their own opinion into
throwing
open air.
Rotten tomatoes every now and then
just
as well.
Screaming their own opinion into open air. That's how I've always seen Twitter.
You know, I think I'll speak to the way I use it.
Okay.
You know, I have a list of people that I think have really interesting perspectives that are helping me to broaden and strengthen some of my own perspectives. It's an easy way to track with what people are thinking about and working on. It's an easy way to get quick updates on news, to see the ideas they're noodling, that sort of thing. So I tend to use Twitter personally a little bit more for information gathering than for information sharing. But it's certainly a great amplification tool, and it's certainly a great way to link in with other people who share similar perspectives, and just to be in their orbit, and to be kind of cross-promoting, cross-pollinating ideas a bit.
Would you say it's accurate that President Trump has dramatically changed the way, I don't know, personalities, you know, national figures communicate through his use of that I've never seen before by any kind of a political elected leader? Has he Trumpified Twitter in a way that we've never seen before? I mean, is that accurate to say?
I think he's certainly changed the expectation for how senior officials, senior elected officials can and will engage. I think that's totally accurate. I think, you know, his politics aside, I think he understands Twitter very well and uses it to his advantage frequently. And I think he's actually, you know, very good at how he makes the channel work for him. And I do think as a result, that's changed how other people are engaging and set a bit of a new precedent.
Mm-hmm. And on the topic of politics, another really interesting personality is Alexandria Gomez-Cortez, you know, who is quite skilled at using Twitter.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think it's interesting to see how different leaders across the board, politics and in business, are starting, have been, but are really finding their voices in new ways via social media. They found a way to tap into their supporters. They have found a way to, without having to go through the process, you know, process of not even that many years ago, right, of working with a journalist, of having to give a quote, of writing an op-ed, right? There were more...
Right.
It was harder to share things in real time, right? Yeah. Like, there was just a longer lead often to get opinions out, or it was, you know, it had to be handled on live TV. And I think the immediacy that many leaders are finding is that they can share their point of view directly with their supporters in the moment is really working well for a lot of people.
Well, and as far as politics goes, I think the ability to talk directly to your constituents, to your people, is
absolutely
is a very valuable thing. And as odd as it is to, you know, have a tweet being breaking news, it certainly is nice, as, you know, the person that these politicians are working for, to be able to know what is happening all the time at the moment when it's happening.
Yeah. That's exactly right. You know, we do, Edelman has for quite some time, nearly two decades, done a study called the Trust Barometer.
Okay.
That essentially is looking at, you know, who people are willing to listen to, who they trust, and exploring how trust is impacting relationships that institutions of business, government, media, and NGOs have with their stakeholders. And one of the things, one of the findings that we've seen build over the past couple of years and really come forward in 2018 is exactly what you were just getting at. So accessibility, transparency, and authenticity are key drivers of trust. And social media has broken down all the barriers so that consumers, constituents, supporters can hear directly from the leader that they're supporting. And as a result, you know, flaws and all in the system, right? When it's imperfect, when it's fast, when it's maybe a bit more emotional than it might have been had it gone through, you know, writing teams, et cetera, people find it's more authentic, more believable, they're more willing to get behind it. And they're demanding it.
Do you think it has affected the expediency with which politics operates? Like, are things getting done faster now because these politicians can speak more directly to their people, to their constituents, and tell them exactly what their plans are and what's going on? Does this make things move faster, or does it just give more information to the people and everything stays moving the way it has always?
You know, I'm not sure, as we're in a current government shutdown, I'm not sure.
Things are not moving faster.
That it's making things materialize faster, that it's solving problems faster necessarily, but it's certainly helping the flow of information. It's democratizing how people are able to get information and access.
So things are probably still happening at the same pace, but people are more informed of what's happening.
Yeah, that may be true. There may be some great examples of how people have been able to move something farther, faster, you know, by public support. But I think generally, what we're benefiting from is the access to the information.
Mm-hmm. And the downside, there's lots of downsides as well. And one of the downsides are the kinds of ways that, let's say, a brand, whether it's an individual or a corporation, can get hurt very, very quickly. I mean, we've all seen these videos posted of employees in very, very well-known retail companies doing something, or celebrities doing something really stupid, and it goes viral very, very fast.
Yeah. There's no brain-to-mouth filter when you have social media at your fingertips.
Yeah, it's true. We and our clients operate under the expectation that at any moment somebody could be videoing what's going on, and therefore at any moment you are vulnerable for answering to, you know, a mistake, a lapse in judgment, intentional or not. So it has made companies, individuals, politicians, it's added a layer of vulnerability. And, you know, talking about how quickly someone's responding to something, to your earlier question, Monica, it's necessitated that all parties respond more quickly when something does happen, right? You don't get the luxury anymore of being able to sit and discuss and investigate for a couple of days before you need to come out to the public and explain what happened.
Yeah, much faster.
Right.
So the accountability.
There's an expectation that your public's going to hear from you immediately, and even if you don't have all the answers, they expect to hear that you're working on it. They expect to hear a plan of what you're going to do, and they expect your reaction to be in line with what they understood your values as a company to be.
You know, the other thing related to this is this entire theme of fake news, phony information being shared and going viral all over the place. And there was a major article in today's Sunday's paper, Detroit Free Press, today, about the fact that by far the largest amount of fake news or phony information that is being shared on the internet is being done by people 50s, 60s, and 70s. And would you agree with that? Have you seen that research, Ashley? And is there a level of sophistication from maybe younger users of being able to realize that things are not necessarily accurate before they start sharing them?
You know, I've seen some similar research, and I think that, you know, anecdotally, I feel like I've absolutely seen some of that in play, particularly as you think back around some of the election cycles and how information was being shared at those moments. I think a couple of things are at play. One, people, those that are creating the fake news, have gotten more sophisticated, and it looks more legitimate, right?
It's like counterfeit news. I mean, you can call it, and it's being created intentionally.
Mass-produced.
Legitimate. And I think, you know, part of the challenge of social media is that we curate for ourselves groups of people that we have similarities with, and so we're more likely to trust than what is shared with it among these groups. So I think that, you know, a lot of what happens.
If somebody who's like me shared this, then I trust it.
Shares this, and it validates my belief set. So I say that's right, and I'm going to share it forward myself. I liken it a little bit to the days of when you had the email forwards, right? That you would have to go to Snopes to check to see, is this real or not? It's kind of the same. It's just happening faster and at much, you know, broader levels.
What's your advice? Can I just make a what's your advice for people, you know, to do as they look at things? I mean, before they hit share.
Yeah, so what I do when I get a story is, first, I do try to look at the source. Is this a media outlet or a media company I've heard of before? Go to their actual website. And then more broadly, because I agree, it's tough, and I think that's the trick here, is it's not easy. More broadly, I think we all benefit from having a more diverse, from reading from a more diverse set of media. So I try to not just read media outlets, reporters that reflect my views. I try to look across all the media options. I try to read non-U.S. outlets as well as U.S. outlets. I think some of the objectivity and critical thinking that would benefit us all is just making sure that we're getting exposed to ideas beyond those that just reflect our own personal beliefs, to continually challenge us to think, you know, both differently about the ideas at hand, but to help us to read with a little bit more objectivity, so we can start to spot, you know, some of the common themes in fake news and inaccurate reporting.
So for one more social media platform to add into the mix, I'm curious about sort of these, I'm going to call them cult social media platforms, as in cult movies, you know, these sort of smaller communities. Reddit in particular is what I'm thinking of. So Reddit is obviously not of the same caliber as most of the social media we've been talking about, but they've accomplished about a lot of crazy things, including finding missing people and solving murders. Like, that's what these communities have done. How does a social media like Reddit come into the mix of all the stuff that we're talking about here?
I think what's a little different about Reddit versus like a Facebook or a Twitter is that the community members of Reddit are a little, they're a little more committed to the community goals. Like they do, I think they kind of self-police a little bit more. There's deeper conversation. Not as many people are just passing through Reddit. You tend to have community members that are very committed to the community, the topic, the conversation, making it productive. So I think there's that, there's a little of that difference. Whereas Twitter and Facebook are so fast moving, such a mass audience.
You're less anonymous on Reddit, or more anonymous on, you're more not anonymous on Reddit is what I meant to say.
Yes, that is part of it. Although, you know, you can easily create a fake profile. I think it's just a little bit of the culture that community has created and how they go about enforcing that culture.
Well, we have just a couple of minutes left, but we've been talking a lot about, let's say, corporate branding in some ways, and also political leaders. But what about from a personal brand point of view? I think that, is it worth everyone who is on social media being conscious of the fact that whether they realize it or not, they have a personal brand and they are creating one? What's your thoughts about that?
I agree 100%. So I think what's interesting as we look both across business and politics, that what's happening online is driving offline actions more and more. And we see it in recruiting, we see it in talent selection and development, that people are looking at candidates' social profiles and how they're evaluating their ability to represent an organization and fulfill a job. So, you know, I would say that it's both never too early to start to think about how your social channels are reflecting your personal brand, and on the flip side, it's never too late if you are new to social media to start thinking about how one channel at a time, you can start to build out your personal brand in ways that make it easy for people to both find you and to understand what you're about. And maybe a quick way to think about that is the channel that we hadn't had a chance to speak about yet, LinkedIn. But LinkedIn is certainly a great place to start if you don't already have a LinkedIn profile, and it's certainly a channel that we're seeing evolve quite a bit if you're currently on it. But, you know, whereas I think, you know, my initial understanding of it, you know, when it first launched was kind of a living, breathing resume, if you will, a means to job hunt.
Right. That was my feeling about it, although I've started to sense I need to get on to LinkedIn a whole lot more actively.
That's right. It's becoming a really effective thought leadership platform.
It was so never that effective for me because I was always into the arts stuff.
That's fair. No, that's totally fair. I think its focus has broadened a little bit. And the emphasis that LinkedIn is putting on sharing articles and stories has expanded quite a bit, and it's now there's multimedia capabilities. You can have multiple pictures. You can have video.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just has become it's the first step. You know, when you're trying to understand who someone is, you typically try to find their LinkedIn page as a start. So just having an up-to-date and easily findable page that gives some explanation of who you are is a great jumping off point. And then I would say an easy way to think through how might I strengthen my strategy across all my channels is just to look at, you know, what do I want people to take away from my LinkedIn page, and how do I support that via what I'm posting on Twitter, Instagram, and other places. And, you know, in all things, don't forget that people follow people on social media because they want to follow humans. They actually want to get to know who you are. So it's okay to have personal content too, right? Like
some personality.
Yeah.
Right, a personality. We typically say, like, think about it 80-20 as a rule of thumb. Like 80% can focus on professional and thought leadership, but have that 20% that lets people understand how you grew up, where you went to school, what you like to do on the weekends, because it makes you a well-rounded person. And it's
yeah,
you know,
so it should have a little bit more fun in there as well.
Yeah.
Well, and what about for a platform like us? Like, what about for a podcast, for a powering up type thing? What are some tips that you would give to us?
Well, you know, I think what's so great about powering up and concept and the community you're building is the networks that you're building, right? The networks among women and men, allies that are really looking to support women developing as leaders. So I would say it'd be really smart to think about how you're applying your offline networks to sharing your content online. So when you're posting about a new podcast or a story or a project you're working on, regardless of the channel, making sure that you're tagging the speaker or tagging whomever you're partnering with so that you're benefiting from their networks as well as your own, and encouraging them to share on your behalf. So you're constantly widening the net of people that you're able to reach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big thing that I've heard a lot that I've failed to enact more is tag everything with everything you can think of.
Hashtag. So tagging people on Facebook and hashtags also, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Well, this has been absolutely fascinating, Ashley. Thank you.
Our guest has been Ashley Whitlock, branding expert of Edelman Global Marketing and Communications. I'm Monica Doyle, having a great week. Hope everybody else has a great week too.
Thanks for listening to our Powering Up podcast, everybody. We hope you'll subscribe and share it with your network. And Monica and I would always love to hear from you through the Powering Up Women Facebook page or at Ann Doyle LDR on Twitter. And our thanks to Robin Kinney and the Motor City Woman Studios, where they and we are amplifying the voices of women. And remember, power is the currency for getting things done. Claim yours and put it to work.